Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. The Lakers won and all is right again. So I'm here to talk with Pete Zayas, who was there at the game. It's weird to, I don't know why I just announced you as Pete Zayas. That sounds really formal.
It did. It sounded very unfamiliar.
Yeah. Well, I'm here with Coach Beat, and
I guess that's more like it, I guess.
And so we're going to have a little bit more fun with this show than we had on the last one, because the outcome was significantly better. Pete, you were in the house for tonight's game. And before we get to the specifics of the parts of the show that we wanted to talk about tonight, I'm interested to see like what the vibe was like to you for what was a really weird game and the way that it played out.
It really was, wasn't it? It was, so Staples was really rocking in that first quarter. Like as I get older, maybe this is just me, you know, getting old. I have come to really enjoy defense. I think that's the thing that gets me most hyped. Mm-hmm. And the way they opened that game on the defensive end, as soon as we're done recording here, I'm, you know, going to hop on, make a video for Silver Screen about the defense in the first quarter. Oh my goodness, man. It was, and I asked Luke about that specifically in the post game, and he was like, that's as good as we're capable of playing on defense. It was just incredible. And then the like second through the first part of the third quarter was just this like slow descent, and like Staples was really restless, man. Like there were like boos, you know, like yeah. There were mild boos starting to,
I mean, you happen. You can say that you were booing. It's okay.
And yeah, man, like it's interesting. I think like the boos come from a place where we just saw you playing really hard,
right?
Like 30 minutes ago.
And we know what you're capable of.
We know what
the
you're
hell
capable
just happened.
And it's not like shooting, you know, lights out from 3-point range or something like that. They were so locked in defensively and they were so energetic. And then to see that just go away to the completely opposite end of the pendulum was really frustrating. So, but they pulled it out. I liked the way they closed out the game, especially defensively. And everyone got tacos.
Tacos are great.
Yeah.
I mean, even Jack in the Box, I'm not really a big fan of Jack in the Box, unless they're interested in sponsoring the show. Then I'm the biggest Jack in the Box ever. But I'm not really, but Jack in the Box tacos are kind of an underrated fast food item.
They are. I think they're best when preceded by alcohol.
Yes. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Jack in the Box tacos when, you know,
when they're free and you've had a bunch to drink.
Yeah, that's the time. And maybe 2 a.m. and you have not had a well-rounded meal as your dinner. That's the time for those tacos.
So in about 2 hours or so. So tonight's show, though, or tonight's game, was kind of different from the rest of the other ones because of the way that it played out in regards to lineup and everything like that. I ate some crow because of the way that the Lakers opened, and I was happy to do so. This is the thing. When I criticize, it's not from a standpoint of I'm criticizing and therefore I hope I'm correct. No, when I criticize, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm proved incorrect on these takes. More often than not, it turns out, I am. But the Lakers open up that game. They finish that first quarter with a 38-15 final score in that first. And so we're going to flip the script a little bit in terms of the way the show was going to go. My question to you is, Pete, do you think what the Lakers are doing in that first quarter is sustainable, or do you think that was a confluence of events that might not be replicated?
So sustainable, no. That's not something that's not ever going to be normal. That was some of the best defense I've seen at Staples Center in the couple of years that I've been going to every game. And so that's not something they can do every night. But seeing that they have that gear in them, and, you know, obviously the Pacers are without their best player and shot creator.
Certainly
that's
helps.
Not that's definitely not sweep that under the rug. But it was great defense nonetheless. Had Oladipo been in there and they played with the same defensive effort and focus and following the game plan, like they would have still been a great quarter. What the optimistic version is that that's what maybe it can look like a lot during the playoffs. I don't think that that's all the time over 82 games.
I like that point.
But like in those, like we're really locked in and playing for this game is really, really important for them to have that in them. That meant a lot to me actually to see them play at that level. I didn't know they could get to that gear.
It's funny. I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd. Do you read?
So I watched all of the Harry Potter movies over the course of this summer. You know, I'm not into pretty much anything except for basketball, and music, and dogs. But yeah, I am familiar with the universe now after the being pushed toward it by Jeannie and Joey Ramirez and my son and all that.
You should thank all of them, by the way. But there's a scene in the third book / movie where Harry Potter has to basically conjure up a spell that requires confidence. It requires recalling a positive event and building off of those emotions to be able to recall the spell and be able to duplicate the spell and execute the spell. And in the scene's absolute pivotal moment, or in the movie, in the book's absolute pivotal moment, he conjures up the spell and he retroactively basically says that he's able to pull off that spell because he knows he's done it before, right? The confidence comes from the fact that, and it was like, it's a weird thing. I'm not going to get into the weeds into it, but basically it was I can replicate and duplicate that spell because I know I've done it before. And that first quarter, if you're the Lakers and you're looking into big moments down the road, when they have to conjure that type of effort up again, they can always point back to this first quarter and say, we've done it before. This is where that's important.
For sure. And that's something that one of the observations I had tonight was that it's very much tied to how assertive LeBron is on offense. And obviously he's a part of it on defense too. But just like if LeBron is leading the way and really like taking charge of the game on that end, the kids can handle the defensive end by and large and will bring the energy on that. In the middle parts of this game, LeBron was less assertive and the young guys really followed. Now, that's not to be unexpected, but it is a little bit problematic. We don't want LeBron having to play as many minutes as he played tonight and has played in a few games recently. And on top of that, them being like hard, like I'm dominating this game type of minutes, I just don't think that's good over the long run. So they got to figure out a way to like put their foot on the gas defensively without LeBron absolutely asserting his will on offense.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Another huge development, I think, for fans watching that game tonight was Lonzo Ball finishing the fourth quarter. That's where we were going to start the show tonight. We actually flipped it a little bit. So in the second segment, we're going to talk about what we saw from that, how big it is that he was in those minutes, and all of that. So hang tight for a bit. We'll come back to that. So heading into tonight's game, I actually wrote an article. I think I wrote an article. Yeah, I wrote an article for
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I wrote it. I might have just assigned it to Callie and said do your thing. But I wrote an article where actually yes, Lonzo said all the right things about wanting to close games and how tough it is to watch from the sideline. And I basically wrote, and I've said on this show a couple times and on the other show that I do, that it felt big picture as if Luke Walton was looking for reasons not to play Lonzo down stretches of games. And he was, and to Luke's credit, he was doing a really good job of communicating and offering up rationalized and nuanced reasons and explanations why Lonzo wasn't playing late in games, even when Rajon Rondo went down. And I said that if for somebody as important to the organization and franchise as Lonzo Ball is, you shouldn't be looking for reasons not to play him. You should be looking for reasons to play him in those situations to get him reps, because if this organization, this franchise, this team is going to reach their absolute highest ceiling, it's going to be because Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, those guys get it. Those guys figure it out. Lonzo Ball plays in the fourth quarter. And so I liked what I saw from him there. They kept the game relatively simple for him. LeBron handled the ball for big chunks of that fourth quarter, especially late. But Pete, what did you see from him? And do you agree with the larger point that Lonzo probably should be in those situations?
Yeah, so let's start with that larger point. I do agree, but I understand why he's not. And this comes from, there are different perspectives of looking at pretty much anything in life.
Why do you hate Lonzo so much? Is my
question. Well, I try and look at it through Luke's eyes.
Yeah.
In that if Luke does not trust what Lonzo is bringing that night, and that is not necessarily what he thinks of Lonzo long term or anything like that, or if somebody else, so for example, the Orlando game, which the Lakers came back in the fourth quarter after being down 15 to start it, they had KCP in the game instead of Lonzo, and Lonzo had been totally fine in the first three quarters, but he didn't play in that fourth quarter. From Luke's perspective, Luke is trying to win games. He can talk all he wants about the long-term development and all that stuff, and it's not totally a lie or anything like that. But if Luke Walton doesn't win games, he's not going to be around for the long-term stuff.
Yeah.
Right? He has to, like, imagine if the Lakers lost this game tonight. We'd totally be on Luke's ass, mm-hmm. right? And now, like, Brandon didn't finish the game in this game, right? So he's trying to, on that particular night, he's trying to win those games. And that does not necessarily mean that, you know, he doesn't like a guy and whatnot. But I agree with your point that they should be looking for reasons to have Lonzo in the game. I just understand that in the moment, individually, and I haven't agreed with Luke on all of them in the moment, right? Like, Lonzo should have been on the court because he was playing perfectly fine or well that right. night. One of the things I think we saw, and I hope that Luke saw this in tonight's game, is Lonzo was not good on the offensive end, but man, can that kid defend.
Yeah.
And he especially, you know, and he's on a bad ankle. We weren't even sure he was going to play tonight, right? He is everywhere. And really when it comes down to it, if you've got LeBron James trying to win a close game at the end of the game, like, he's going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to do most of the work. If you can defend, you're going to be in a pretty good position. And yeah. I think Lonzo is the best defender on the team. I really do. And he, as a result, when he's bringing the effort and intensity, he probably should be in the game no matter what. But I do understand where Luke comes from on that.
My thing is, if you're trying to inspire somebody long term, if you're trying to get the most out of a player and get consistent energy and attentiveness from a player, you reward them when they play the right way, right? And sure. tonight tonight Lonzo lived up to the billing, right? And you mentioned, so it was funny, while you were talking about the way that Lonzo Ball defends, the thing that I immediately jumped back to was that Denver game that they won, where he absolutely dominated down the stretch of that game defensively.
Yeah.
And my thing is, if you want to get that kind of effort from Lonzo, then you need to reward him in those games where he actually lives up to the way that you want him to play. And I just think, you know, as much as I completely... And all of this can be true, by the way. I agree with you. And I think it's important to understand the context under which Luke Walton is coaching this team. He needs to win games. And so because of that, that complicates some of his decision-making. I basically tweeted out tonight because somebody said something along the lines of, like, Luke Walton needs to be fired because of whatever, this and that and the other. I forget what it was that the person was complaining about. And I said, Luke Walton has a boss.
Yeah. And, yes.
And what it comes down to is while Luke Walton might understand what might be best for the organization, he also has to do what he can to remain employed, and those things can't be undervalued in the analysis of the entire situation.
That's absolutely the case. I guess the one thing I would say is that if Lonzo is in fact the team's best defender, or he's right up there, and Luke Walton is trying to win games, those things work together quite nicely.
That's funny, right? It's funny how that works.
So if Lonzo is bringing the heat, and to be honest, it's been several games, a nice stretch from Lonzo from an energy perspective. Like at the beginning, you know, the first 10, 15 games of the season, we were really complaining a lot about just the disengagement, right? Kind of floating around. Shoots well, shoots poorly, attacks the basket, or what have you. He hasn't really had those types of games where he's not really locked in one way or another, because he's capable of contributing in so many different ways that he has been finding ways to contribute at a high level in different aspects of the game, even if his shot wasn't falling tonight. So I'm hoping if Lonzo continues to do that, that those things are going to start to sync up more and more, the Luke's desire to win that game with Lonzo Ball being on the court, because those two things work pretty nicely together.
This will be the last point I make this segment, and then we'll carry it over to the third. Where I feel comfortable predicting that Luke figures this out and recognizes that his interests and Lonzo's interests kind of align, and his interests and Lonzo's talents kind of align here, is that I don't feel Luke is so stubborn so as to ignore what he brings to the table. That kind of separates him. When this show in its infancy started, I spent a lot of time complaining about Byron Scott because he was so stubborn over the fact that, like, no, it's my way, and so-and-so young player just doesn't get it because they're young, and therefore I'm just not going to play that guy to make a point to everybody. I don't see Luke Walton as that kind of coach, and I think that's an important difference to show here, to point to here.
No, that's a very solid point.
All right, we're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Brandon Ingram. We noticed some things about the way he was utilized tonight. You mentioned it a couple times while you were firing off your tweets, and I agreed with them as well. We're also going to mention Rajon Rondo, who gets quite a bit of heat because he was getting a lot of those fourth quarter minutes that we would like to see go to Lonzo Ball. But I do think some of the Lakers giving up late or larger leads has a lot to do with not having a point guard on the court. And that's where Rajon Rondo's absence is kind of felt. And then at the very end, because the Lakers won, I can get Pete to point to a funniest moment of the night. So hang tight, everybody. All right, we are back. Let's start with Brandon Ingram. He, as you said, he didn't finish the game, which it's weird. It's gonna come off as hypocritical, and I'm sure that I'm gonna get a lot of double standardish comments to my analysis here. Brandon Ingram not finishing that game doesn't bother me so much because he wasn't doing enough to me that like said he has to be on the court. Right. And he has had those opportunities over the course of the season where at this point, if he misses one late quarter or late game stretch, then I'm more okay with that. That said, though, the way that the Lakers were utilizing him was different. And that's what you and I have been looking for here. Right. Was. We believe in patience as it pertains to Brandon Ingram in the Lakers organization, so long as you don't keep beating your head over the side of the wall with the way that you're utilizing him. And we saw in tonight or last night's game him being on the move when he caught the ball a lot more. And I think that's a big development for his development.
That is a big development for his development, Anthony.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Lakers.
I just enjoyed the phrasing on that. Yes, so they had him coming off of a few Iverson cuts, which is when you cut from one wing to the other, and there's usually two guys on the horns, on the elbows, setting screens as you cut across. And he had a couple buckets off of LeBron assists, at least two. And I think before that, there were 10, maybe 11 assists to Ingram from LeBron this year, which is a very low number for a fellow starter, especially a guy who's, I think, the third leading scorer on the team. And so that was nice to see. It's kind of like that meme of like the figure with the stick that's like poking something, like, do something, right? And I've been wanting Luke to just try new things with that whole dynamic, and I think that this was the first part of that. Brandon struggled quite a bit as the point guard for the second unit, and I think that's worth discussing a bit. But in terms of like how he interacted with LeBron, I thought tonight like they started to maybe be onto something with some of the off-ball actions they were running Brandon off of.
I thought this game, I have been really hard on Luke over the last couple weeks or so. Except for Michael Beasley playing, I liked the way that this game was coached. There were a couple developments that it's funny when you're watching a basketball game that takes place as part of an 82-game season, you analyze it in the vacuum in which it's played and also try to expound whatever you're watching over to beyond that. There was a play late in the game where LeBron set a screen on Alonzo topside pick and roll. And I just thought that's a really good way to use LeBron because it allows him to catch the ball on the run. I really like the fact that the Lakers ran later in the game than they have typically run in other games. And I just think given the team's half-court struggles, that's a really important thing that they have to make sure that they continue to do. It was a good game all around, you know, even taking into account the loss late leads and all of that stuff, and we'll get to that here in a bit. But as it pertains to Brandon Ingram, we basically said, hey, we need to see a different way that he's utilized. And now that it's only one game, so maybe the Lakers revert to some of the bad habits that they were instilling upon him in the first place. But if the way that they're utilizing him, and if this role continues, well, now it's up to Brandon Ingram to meet them halfway, right? And you know, he shoots 6 of 15 for 14 points, only gets to the free throw line 5 times. He has to meet them halfway with the efficiency that he's capable of. And I guess my question to you here, Pete, before we move on to Rajon Rondo is, do you think he's capable at this point, 2.25 years in, do you think he's capable of meeting them halfway now that they've kind of tweaked his role, if that continues?
No, I don't. I don't think that it's something that, so first off, let's kind of define what that means,
yeah,
of meeting them halfway. For me, it's some ability to operate off of the ball. Just in a sentence, that's what that would look, at least on the offensive end. And I don't think he has the footwork necessary to be able to do that as a catch and shoot guy. And I mean, maybe you can use him as a screener more often. That's something that I've said. But his game is so, whether he has a good game or a bad game, it has become so centered around having the ball in his hands and dribbling a lot before he makes his move, that I think he's about as far away from the ability to operate off of the ball effectively as he could be right now. Mm-hmm. Now, is there going to be the occasional back screen that Lonzo sets for a lob to BI or him coming off of an Iverson cut with an advantage? Sure, you can make that work. But some of the things off of the ball, and you know, they've had him as the backup point guard essentially, and it's looked bad, man. Like, guys,
it's not been good.
It's been really disorganized. Like,
yeah,
watch how late they get into their first action. Mm-hmm. They run that stagger screen play I always talk about, right, where it's the double screen for the shooting guard coming out of the corner, either KCP or Josh Hart normally. And like tonight, and it's, this isn't unusual, there's like 11 seconds left before everybody gets to their spot. Yeah. Not even before like the action has started, but just like it gets organized at that point. And at the end of the day, like, we've wanted to see this, and we've wanted to like separate his minutes from LeBron as much as possible. But Brandon Ingram is not a point guard. He was not raised as one, and that's okay, right? I think, just kind of thinking out loud here, until Rondo gets back, one of the things that may be worth trying out is actually getting Lonzo and Brandon with the second unit.
Yeah.
And so, like, subbing in Josh and KCP, right? Because LeBron has really transitioned to, like, that point guard role, right? He's been much more on top. And so you could totally play KCP and Josh together with
him. Absolutely.
You've got some floor spacing. So say that the 5-minute mark or so, Brandon and Lonzo come out, Hart and KCP come in. So you got LeBron as the point guard with three floor spacers in Hart, KCP, and Kuzma, and then a lob threat in either Tyson Chandler or JaVale McGee. Then with that second unit, you've got Lonzo running point, and then Brandon being able to be a wing, but not necessarily that being taken up by LeBron James. You know what I mean? So I think that puts probably Brandon in his most natural position. This is just me thinking off the top of my head, but I think that may be the way to go, because that second unit really needs a point guard right now.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, how long have we been saying that, like, I'm not going to make the point I was, because I'm going to make it later in the show. But yes, I completely agree with you. And it actually offers up a perfect segue into why I wanted to give Rajon Rondo some props tonight, even though he didn't play and hasn't played in a while or whatever. But the Lakers give up yet another big lead. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that you know this as a coach, and you I think this is important to mention. Point guards just look at basketball in a different way. They recognize, like, the good point guards out there, and Rajon Rondo, for all of his flaws as a player, is built of this same kind of mold, that he recognizes, hey, so-and-so hasn't gotten going yet tonight. We should probably try to get that guy an easy look. Hey, that guy has missed three consecutive isolation possessions here in a bit. We should try to get a little bit more movement in the offense. They're on a bit of a run because we keep on missing deep three-pointers. We should try to get something closer to the basket to make sure that we don't stop, it stops them from running a little bit. Those are just things, those are ways that a point guard looks at the game that the Lakers really severely miss. And you mentioned it a second ago while we were talking about Brandon Ingram. He isn't a point guard. And as much as people might dislike the fact that Rajon Rondo was getting minutes from Lonzo Ball, like, this is those leads that go from 18 to 7 as quickly as you can blink an eye, like, that has a lot to do with the fact that that second unit just tends not to have a point guard on the court who thinks of the game beyond the current possession, and the Lakers really miss that.
Yeah, and even beyond the current possession, you kind of spoke to this, but in a sentence, it's like, how do all of the five guys work together as opposed to, like, my role in the, like, a guy like Rondo sees how all the pieces fit together, as opposed to just his piece within the broader puzzle. So, that's something that, I don't know, man. We watched Tyler Ennis for, like, a year and a half, and I understand that people are frustrated about Lonzo not playing closing games or as many minutes as they want him to play. And I understand that. I'm in that boat too. That frustration can get transferred to the guy who's taking his minutes, who is Rondo, and Luke Walton and all that. But, like, going from Tyler Ennis to Rondo is a big upgrade. And when Rondo's out, and going from Rondo to, like,
you know, Brandon Ingram.
To Ingram as a point guard.
Yeah.
Just strictly as a point guard.
Yeah.
Right. And doing point guard things is a big downgrade. And a lot of this is us trying to, like, find, like, where does Brandon fit in all of this, and, like, how do we get the most out of him? But we're really seeing just the impact of, like, Rondo can make it look not awful, and sometimes that's what you need. Just, like, don't be awful, especially on a night like tonight where the starters and in
came
that first
one
they freaking dominated, right?
Yeah.
So if you could just, like, not totally suck, like, that's probably Anthony, I'm so dying for a blowout. I'm sorry, this is off topic,
but
I just need a blowout in my life. Like, I'm trying to take more joy in this Lakers season because I don't want to be the miserable guy that, like, everything has to be totally perfect in order for me to enjoy this. But, like, I just need one game for them to just beat the crap out of somebody.
Yes, and then I would love to turn my brain off. Like, in a positive way.
Right. Hey, let's fee and mow some shots.
Yeah.
Out while the starters sit on the bench and cheer them on. Like, I need that kind of game. Not the type where they're getting blown out and then it's like, damn it, Svee, why can't you make a damn shot? You're breaking my heart.
Yeah. I completely agree. And while, like you said, and I've said this a couple in a couple different iterations, it's been said already, there are frustrations that have to do with Rondo as a player and also as the role that he's played so far in this Lakers season. But the Lakers do miss him. It, just from the standpoint of he thinks like a point guard, and that's a valuable asset that it turns out for this Lakers team. All right, let's send everybody off here with some positivity. The Lakers wound up winning. Honestly, the funniest look that I got the last time you and I spoke was looking at your face when I said, "Hey, I don't think we should do a funniest moment." And if looks could kill, I wouldn't be hosting this show right now.
Yeah. I'm glad you know me well, Anthony. So my funniest moment, I took the train into Staples, and as soon as I stepped off the train, there was this weird, like, flash flood. It was like this apocalyptic rain for like 3 minutes. I'm talking people running in the streets. I was the only person on the street not running, like, out of it, because I was just like, I was just grumpy for whatever reason. So I'm like, I'm going to, like, marinate in this, you know, depressed mood that I'm in. And so anyhow, so I walk in.
You know what's funny? Fun fact to those of you who are listening right now. If it's like pouring rain, you actually get more drenched by running than if you walk.
I did not know that. Well, yeah. I was pretty drenched nonetheless. But
that's good. You're screwed either way.
I'm generally not a runner in the first place, but yeah. Anyhow, so I get in and I'm just kind of like in this bitchy mood and I'm completely sopping wet. And it was only lasted like 3 minutes. By the time I like walked in, the rain was fine.
Will do that to you.
And so I walk in and like, everyone's dressed all kinds of weird. I'm like, why is Stu Lance, and I'm in this bitchy mood, like, why is Stu Lance dressed like Walt Frazier going to a funeral?
Oh, man, like, that's a good description.
Because it's funny. Like, that was Stu's, like, dressing up, like, Sacred Night, which I did not know at the time. But it looked like a toned-down version of Walt Frazier. So, walking into the media room and seeing the Indiana people, there were, like, probably six. Geeter had a, like, nice fly, outfit on, nice and tailored and nice colors and whatnot. But I was wondering, I'm like, what the hell is everyone wearing tonight? And I didn't know it was Sacred Night. So that... that like little moment of what the hell is going on with my
well mother. You're sopping wet.
Yes.
I was actually rocking that same kind of like Sager-ish outfit at home.
I saw you post a picture. Yeah,
my wife was like, Jen goes, Fred, what are you doing? And I was like, it's Sager night. Okay, yeah, I should totally understand what that means.
As, right, it's supposed to mean something to me, right?
Craig Sager helped build the NBA to a level of popularity where you and I can do this. So, like, being able to honor him in any way, shape, or form, I'm up to do that any way that I possibly can. My funniest moment of the night actually has something to do with you. So, Jeannie posts a picture. Jeannie posts a picture of your dog and basically like goes a side eye to this last, I think it was the second quarter that was her tweet. And I meant to screen grab like just a portion of the picture and reply to Jeannie that like when, whatever. And then I get a reply. No, better than I get a reply. I didn't even see my phone. My phone was in the other room. And Jen goes, Fred, why are you posting pictures of Pete's dog?
I was like, is Anthony at my house? Like,
dressed as Craig Sager.
Right. The call is coming from inside the house. Talk about, I was on the other end. I'm like scrolling my timeline. And I'm like, what the fuck?
I'd have had the same response. What the hell are you doing posting pictures of my dog?
I'm going to get some pictures of Callie.
And you have your own dog.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, that was great. Getting that text notification from Jen, from you, asking why I was, that was pretty tremendous. And yeah, the Lakers won. So that's what really means the most. Let's send you guys off into the weekend, though. Thanks to everybody for listening. Quick reminder, get your questions in for iTunes for the 5-star review so I can get to that on Sunday. And also, I didn't mention this at the very beginning of the show, but another reminder, and I'm going to try to make this a daily reminder, on December 13th, it's going to be Locked On Lakers night at Tom's Urban. Pete already responded and said he's going to be there. I have the screen grab. I already saved that. It's stuck forever. So I'm going to have Pete there. I'm going to try to get Harrison there as well, and other guests who have appeared on the show and other writers for Silver Screen and Roll, all that stuff. I'm going to pull off as much of that as I possibly can. So circle that day on your calendar. We'll see you there on December 13th at Tom's Urban. Thanks for listening for today. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there in the rain and all that if you guys are driving in the greater LA area. And we'll talk to you again on Monday.